Thank you. Hi, I'm Scott Moser. I am employed by Cisco Systems. They paid my way here, so I'm happy, and I get to work on lots of neat things with them. My team is working on something called Project Machine on GitHub. You can look at that. It's got a lot of the things that we're trying to do internally and integrate it together in an open source project that we'd like other people to participate in ultimately, but we'll see. I guess if you have questions during this, feel free to stop me and ask. I'm fine to be interrupted. Just a little intro. So the goal is to talk about kernel command line and then how you deal with that and systemd and secure or measured boot. And then systemd stub and kind of what it can do, and then stubby, which is the stub loader that we're using, and then questions. So why does the kernel have a command line? Why do you care? Basically, it's a program, like, right? The program you write takes command line args. The kernel takes command line args. It's from that perspective, it just makes obvious sense. And then flexibility, InterMFS and UKI are huge. Right? I mean, if you're going to boot with a different command line and have to regenerate your UKI, that would be insane, right? You'd be shipping around 130 megabytes of stuff in order to differ by a byte or two. Over time, because of the kernel command line's flexibility and the need to be able to do that, bootloaders, Pixieboot, different things like that make it really easy to edit. And people are accustomed to editing it, right? So what does it do? What does the kernel command line do? It does all sorts of stuff, like a lot of stuff. I say it's one part system configuration, like console equal or, you know, this system's parameters. One part workaround, maybe you've got some, you know, blacklist this module or do different things. One part debug for people to get in, right? Or potentially a rootkit there. And then it's used by both kernel and user space. So not just the kernel, but user space consumes that in a lot of ways. Inside the kernel, it's widely used. There's like 900 parameters, over 900 in kernelparameters.txt. The kernel parameters that go into the kernel proper have no namespace at all. And it's reasonable. It's command line interface. You're talking to the kernel. The module parameters are then namespaced with mod name-var name, so that's good, right? You can kind of look at the parameter and know what it's going to be used for. And then the kernel supports actually key value pair with quotes around it, which is I was kind of surprised that it did. So that could be useful. And generally the kernel's handling of command line is pretty consistent, and over time there's been improvements. I don't know what kernel went in, but recently they supported a dash dash, or start ignoring anything after the dash dash as kernel arguments. Like the kernel will stop parsing when it sees a dash dash, just kind of like user space programs often do. And then recently they started flagging unknown kernel command line parameters. So when the kernel saw one on there before the dash dash, it'll warn you. So like it's getting better in handling of things, right? More user friendly, more able to see errors and stuff. So for user space, consumers, there's like a lot of consumers, right? There's no way even to understand how many consumers there are, because anybody who thought it'd be a good idea to open up proc command line and read it can do that, right? Their little shell script can just cat proc command line, look for some parameter on there, do whatever they want. There's no namespace on it. You have really no idea what's going on. You have no idea what command line parameters are going to have effect. Just a list there, yeah, systemd, cloud init, and NitRamFS, everyone that they all take parameters and installers, and then just really a lot of other things. So it's kind of, user space is less well under, you know, constrained than the kernel, just because it could come from anywhere. So that results in what people have called the kitchen sink. You know, the kernel command line is like this entry point to your boot, right? And everything can be in it. And you really have no idea what's going on. By being overly dramatic, but you don't know what's gonna happen with a given command line. You don't know who's gonna parse it or what's gonna happen. There's no central doc, it's not consistent, and you have lots of different implementations. And then it's confusing. Sometimes like the root equal or IP equal, sometimes the kernel's gonna handle that, sometimes the initramfs is gonna handle it. You don't really, it's hard to know. Then even inside, if you look, this is from, I think, kernel doc somewhere, that quote there. The kernel parses up to the dash dash. If it doesn't recognize a parameter and doesn't contain a dot, the parameter gets passed to an init. Parameters with an equal go into an init's environment. And others are passed as command line arguments. So dash dash foo equal bar is not the same as foo equal bar dash dash. That makes sense. But what was really surprising to me is that if you a dash dash, let's see, foo equal bar dash dash will actually change init's environment. So that means I could pass either systemd proc command line variable to systemd, which is kind of recursive because it will read that as if you gave it proc command, as if it read it from proc command line. Or you can change its path, or you can LD preload. You know, you can do all sorts of things there. It's very powerful, but very, very hacky. So if you've been following along here in the TPM and measured boot things, unless you weren't present for all of the previous talks, you kind of might see where this is going. For measured boot, you basically can't give arbitrary access to the kernel command line, right? That's not going to go well. It's a major attack vector, and there are just lots of things that might get you into trouble. I didn't mean to make that black. So the last week there was a CVE or a blog post there about mash enter to bypass full disk encryption, right? And that wasn't a kernel command line attack, but it gives you an idea on the amount of stuff that is happening in the initramfs and the amount of attack surface you have on that initramfs, right? So you want to turn down that as much as you can. I think probably at this point, after a day and a half, everybody's got a decent idea of what an EFI stub is in a UKI. And so I don't need to spend too much time there, I think. You can build in a full command line if you want. You know, you can build into a full command line into your stub if you want, and that's very nice and secure, but it's really, really rigid, even for like our use, and my team is an appliance, but then some systems need one parameter on the command line and some need another, and it's just really rigid. And then in the event that you have to sign each of those different kernel parameters or command lines, you then have to have a signing material each time you have to do so. So SD stub, if you're here, you're looking at system at stub and UEFI loading, you probably have some familiarity with this. Again, like unless you were just not here earlier. It's pretty good. It's got good utilities, good tools there. It's got UKFI makes it really easy to build it. There is very active development, like really active development, and so following, keeping up is non-trivial. And then there's loads of functionality there. I mean, there's been multiple talks here. You could definitely do full talks on just SD boot by itself. There is really good doc. It's really good. I mean, if you're in the position where you can fly to Germany and have Luca or Leonard talk to you, then that's great. But if you can't come here, then the documentation is a good second thing, you know. So how does SD stub work? There's companion files alongside the kernel in the like kernel name.efi.d directory. And based on their name, they're loaded as add-ons. And then each of the add-ons has in it a section for command line, SBAT, and uname. The command line is obvious. It's a command line parameter that the SDBoot will load, look at the command line parameter, and basically then append to the command line. The SBAT is what is inherited or reused from SD, from shim, and it is a way that you can, revoke access to existing kernel or existing things. So in the situation that you're ever in that you have to revoke a signed kernel command line addition, that's the way that would happen. And then uname. So if there's a uname section and it matches, or if there's a uname section, SDShim will only use that parameter with a kernel that also says it's that same version. I think that's a huge addition. Is one of the things I argue for on the pull request, because then you limit your attack surface to, oh, that was a bad kernel parameter, to, oh, that was a bad kernel parameter on a kernel that I signed like 6 months ago, or, you know. So that, I think, is very useful. And then the order of command line parameters is supplied by the user, effectively. Whoever controls the ESP, like if you had access to that, or you build up that ESP file system, the order of command line parameters is just an alpha sorted order, however they are in those file names, then they get appended to the kernel command line. So you don't really have a lot of support on, well, I guess you can support them, you can control the order that they're passed, but you can't control the order in which they're merged with the command line, with the existing command line, if that makes sense. So stubby is something we did. We forked off SD-boot. I don't know. It was several years ago. SDStub, several years ago, we forked and then made some changes because we have an internal appliance that basically we weren't going to be able to let bin bash appear on the command line, right? So we did some work before the signed EFI modules were available to do this. And the approach we took was to do a simple allowed list, and it just does token by token matching. I don't support quotes or spaces. You can't do key equal quote space value pair. It's just simple space-based tokenized. It supports exact matches like console equal X, or also begins with by like prefix matching. So console equal kind of star essentially. And right now we're not measuring the kernel command line into anything. We probably should, but in my head it was not obvious whether or not, if you passed the whitelist, whether or not you should measure those arguments into the PCR. You should measure those because you kind of explicitly said that they didn't matter. So then if you don't measure them in, then you have a more stable PCR value that you could compare against, right? Versus if every command line parameter changed. Thank you. If every command line parameter changed the PCR value, then you couldn't write policies. Then you wouldn't be able to access things based on the policy. Some examples, like if you had the token there, verbose or quiet, directly in the section, then those are direct matches. And then the anchored to the beginning key equal or anchored to the beginning, just anything that matches that will work. That works really well with things that are namespaced. Like if your user space application is only going to read parameters that start with, you know, my app dot something, it's easy to say, well, you can pass anything on the command line that takes my app dot, because I know my app dot is not going to give you, I know my app is not going to do arbitrary things and bad things, right, that would compromise my system. So the way it works is you have this built-in, you can build in your command line, you build in a command line command line into the stub. You use this stubby rtcli1 string, which just means I'm going to replace any command line parameters that are passed on the any command line parameters that are passed outside of the stub are going to go into there. So, it's really ugly. I don't like the capital letters. I wanted to make it obvious to anybody that was using it that, you know, hey, and also that they wouldn't accidentally put that string in there, right? But then also just it was clear that this is what's going to happen. So just some examples there. If you have a built-in parameter, a built-in command line up to that dash dash, and then the user were to try to put rd init equal /bin/sh, that tells the kernel, hey, instead of invoking /init in the initramfs, invoke /bin/sh. But because it's after the dash dash there, then it's actually protected. The kernel's not going to pay attention to that. It'll actually end up going as a parameter to init, which wouldn't be great, but is better than just a root prompt. And so there's other examples there. And if you've got a built-in that doesn't contain that string, then and you pass parameters, then you don't get booted. And then if you're running in secure boot mode, it'll go ahead and load. If you're running in secure boot mode and you pass parameters on the command line that are not good, then it's gonna refuse to boot. In insecure mode, if you're not in secure boot mode, then it will go ahead and load them, but warn you and tell you, hey, that wasn't good. Just a comparison here, kind of to look at stub and stubby. You have individual signed kernel parameters in the one versus a whitelist and a loud list in stubby. A bunch of external EFI files versus you've built the thing in to the UKI when you built the UKI. The parameters in stub are appended in user supplied or in file system supplied order, and in stubby the parameters are substituted in user provided order within the original command line. For stub, if you need to add a new command line parameter, like you had somebody in the field or you just realized, yeah, we really need to enable debug messages or early print K or something, you can go ahead and add that later on, sign it, ship it, and it's a, I don't know what, I'm guessing small number of K executable that does what you need it to do, versus in stubby, if you wanted to ever change that, you're basically going to have to ship another kernel, another UKI, which so it's large. Stub, so each time you need to sign a kernel parameter, you're going to need access to key signing material. That makes sense. You obviously had to build these things, and so you had access to key signing material, but so I don't think it's really necessarily any different. But and then stubby, you're just signing it all into one go at that point. Going forward, there's some bugs in stubby that need to work with. We recently had somebody try to do some ARCH 64 support, and I'm sure there's fixes in stub since we forked and just we haven't pulled them in. So we need to do that. I'd like to clean up the substitution or kind of allow multiple substitution pairs maybe so that you could have multiple tokens in the built-in command line that said, if you match these tokens, put them here. If you match these tokens, append them in a second place. So that would allow you to have some tokens go after the dash dash, some tokens go before the dash dash or something like that. And right now the allowed list is hard coded in C in the stubby executable. I mean, you can change it. It's pretty easy to do, but I'd like to be able to add that as a section in the PE file and read from there. And then I'd like to get off of stubby. We'd like to get on to using stub. I think for our use case, probably we can live with what's there. and the EFI signing is sufficient. I think for a more general distribution, then you probably, the whitelist approach might have some more appeal or need. Maybe not, but I think the whitelist approach has merit, and I'd like to kind of look at that upstream. Then I mentioned systemd. Right now, systemd does open up proc command line and just reads the whole command line, pays attention to things that are for it. But I think it should pay attention to less. Like essentially, the kernel said, don't pay attention to the stuff. You know, it namespaced. It tokenized that string into before and after, and so I think user space programs should do that too. I think it just makes for a cleaner solution. And then, yeah, that's it. Thanks. Thank you for being here. Thanks to my team. Thanks for Cisco for sending me here. Thanks to my family for putting up with the fact that Dad just left for a week, and we'll come back jet-lagged, and thank God.
Okay, so questions. Take care. Questions now?
Yep.
We have one.
Yeah, you talked about measuring the command line in PCR, which you can't do, right, because it can change depending on. Would it make sense to then measure the allow list into PCR instead, to still have something to pin against?
Well, the allow list is measured in, I mean, the allow list is inherently measured in because of the thing that loaded it. Right? I mean, SD stub is signed, so it's already measured, essentially. Stubby is signed, not ST stub.
I just wanted to say, like, regarding the namespacing of the options and the dash dash thingy, it's very hard to change that now, of course, yeah. Because this is what everybody does. But it's not that bad. Like, the kernel command line options that systemd uses, they're all prefixed with systemd dot, except for the ones that we inherited from
like
earlier.
Three.
Yeah, so that's part of the API of Linux, I guess. We have to do this, right? So also this warning that the kernel does when it recognizes, it doesn't recognize an option, that actually only is triggered if the setting does not have a dot in it, right? So it kind of pushes user space to actually namespace their stuff with at least one dot. So because they don't want these messages to show up, right? Like, so then the examples that you had there, like at least one of them was not namespace, but if you boot it up with that, then it will just complain about it. But did I get this right, that the only really thing that you're missing in SD boot is the allowless, denialless thingy?
Yeah, I think we could live without it. We could live without it, but so, I think it's more flexible.
Luca is very opinionated about it and hates the idea. I'm actually way more open to this. I think
I was aware of that.
I'd be very open, for example, to and I think we absolutely should do this, and maybe Luca can actually be convinced of that part. At least allow alternative command lines. There you go. So basically, you have a curated list, and you can choose one of them. And this would be something we could even integrate nicely with SDBoot, because then we can actually, like, if you have one drop-in kernel, we will synthesize five or something menu items out of this, reflecting the five things. And then these could be like debug mode and regular mode and whatever else.
Right.
So that's definitely something I think we all can agree on. This would probably get you quite far. And I personally have no problem with coming up with a super simple language that just allow lists additions. What Luca doesn't like about it is that's a parser, This is super high privileged code. But frankly, I mean, we parse PE and whatnot.
That's my approach, thought too. Yeah.
No, we of course we do. Yeah. Yeah. We have all of systemd has like five PE parsers or something. Everybody needs a PE parser. But yeah, I reduced that a little bit. But anyway, so I'm actually kind of open. What I really care about is to make the language for wildcard allowing so dumb that it only does what is actually really makes sense, and not a single bit more, right?
Right. Yeah.
So and I don't know, like, I would be open to that. But I think the first step really should be the like, just allowing alternatives.
The alternatives, yeah.
Yes, let's do the multi-command line first, and then we can fight on the command line list. But I think we are out of time here. Sorry, we need to move to the next one.
All right.
So thank you, Scott.
Thank you.